We are back. It's a new season, season 22-23, the second season of Ange Postecoglou and the 17th season of the world's longest running football fans podcast. I'm Harry Brady and you are listening to a podcast from CelticUnderground.net. So I am joined by Duncan, Lackey Moore and St Anthony as the podcast comes round for, I think it's something like its sixth episode in the last 12 months, 15 months or something like that. So we are here for a pre-season review. So how are you doing, guys?
Fine.
Very good, sir. Good to see you.
Very well, yeah.
All good and all looking forward to the new season ahead. Duncan, have you missed it? Have you missed it while it's been away?
I would play like three games a week, 12 months a year. I hate the off-season. It's just, it rips my knitting and there's nothing really on the telly to watch. So I know I've been at a few of the pre-season friendlies. I was in Warsaw as well last week. I'm itching to get going on Sunday for the start of the season. Very excited.
You were at Warsaw?
I went with my kids and it was actually really flat. It dawned on me when I got out there that's the first time I've been to a European away friendly. And it was like none of the Green Brigade, none of the young team. It was flat. It was all folk like me with their weights and folk that were on holiday. I think it was about 300 Celtic fans there. But it was really good, just a trip. It was a beautiful city and it was good fun. But there wasn't the usual gathering of a taking over the square and draping the flags and hitting up the Irish bars. That didn't really go on, but it was still good fun.
Saint, are you looking forward to things? Have you missed this? Have you missed it in the summer?
I've got to say, I'm one of the guys actually quite likes a wee break in the summer, especially if you've had a good season where you can bask in the enjoyment and look back in it. So I'm looking forward to getting back to it, but I've enjoyed the summer as much as, you know, the end of the season was terrific, you know, winning the league. But I've got to say one thing, and you know, you might think I'm out of order here, but the Rangers in that European final was just a pure nerve-wracking experience.
Oh.
It's hard to describe the feeling when it went to penalties. I just never ever want to feel like that again. I know we probably shouldn't comment on other people's misfortunes, but at least it meant over the summer we didn't need to put up with them. You know, it would have been unbearable if they'd have won that. Absolutely unbearable. But getting back to your point, looking forward to the season very much so on Sunday.
I have to say, actually, on your point there, I have realised from looking at social media and stuff and from my attitude to Rangers in the European final that I'm starting to be different to large chunks of the Celtic support because I honestly couldn't care less about them. I really, really, really couldn't give a monkeys about them. When I didn't want to win the final and then when they didn't win the final, that was me. I was indifferent to it thereafter. So fortunate. George, Lackey, how are you? What about you?
I agree with you. I quite enjoy the close seasons. I've written about it in the past on the website. But I like the idea that we didn't have the stress of pre-qualifying for Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was terrific. We were able just to relax and enjoy it. Now, who knows how we'll get on in Europe. The fact that we didn't need to jump all those hurdles so early has been really quite relaxing, quite enjoyable. But like you, I just try and ignore what's going on in the other side of the city altogether.
I mean, to the extent where I know Rangers have let players go and I know Rangers have signed players, I have no idea how many players they've signed. I couldn't name a single one. I have no idea what position they play in. I mean, that's the extent that I honestly, I mean, I know they're a competitor. I honestly couldn't care less about them. I know, you know, on a match, on a week-by-week basis in the season that comes ahead, I'll obviously be paying attention to what the Rangers' result is. I've just realised it's obviously something that's evolved in the 10 years since they went bust that I just couldn't give a monkeys about them anymore. Fortunately, it's much better for my health, for my sanity, for my mental health.
I agree with you up to a point, but what was going on over there in terms of catching things in the BBC website and thing was, I thought that's what we should have done after we won 9 in a row. I thought it at the time that we should have offloaded the players that wanted to go and used the money wisely to bring in new blood. I think we missed a chance there.
Well, we did our nine in a row podcast. Now, actually, what we did was we repeated history. We kept on players last time when we went for 10 in a row who shouldn't have been kept on. With hindsight position of actually we should have moved them on, but we did that last time. We did that 40 years ago. With hindsight, we moved players on that we should have.
The difference 40 years ago was that between then and now was we actually had players who wanted to go who were worth money, and we ended up not getting the value for them because we kept them. But they weren't that keen on being here.
Well, anyway, that's in the past. This is the new season with a different manager that we're going into. So, a lot of chat, Duncan, about we've made 7 signings. Yes, we have, and no, we haven't, if you know what I mean. It doesn't feel like 7 signings because all those we've made, Cameron Carter-Vickers, Jota, Maeda, they were with the club anyway, so it doesn't quite feel so. What's your thoughts so far on the transfer window?
I've been like everybody else. I'm sure you identify the positions that you want filled, and I was definitely of the opinion that we needed a left back. That was my big priority, our first choice, a sort of Juranovic type player at left back. And I think we need another centre half, and I was looking for a bit of muscle in the middle of the park, a bit of a sort of a hard man, an enforcer, if that's the word that's used. But I have been pretty happy. But like you say, because you end up spending, it's nearly 15 million quid on Jota, Vickers, Maeda, and they don't feel like new players, as you say, but they're 15 million quid. I mean, we've spent nearly 20 million pounds this summer, and we haven't taken a single penny in transfer. Not one cent have we taken in. But no, I'm reasonably happy, and I would hope that we get another couple maybe out the door that would allow us to bring somebody in. But if this is a squad that we start the season with, then I'm happy with that. It's a very settled team.
Interesting you mention about people out the door, because it's, I mean, I actually feel sorry for Julian. It's fairly clear that the club don't want him. Looks like the unspoken thing is that he probably failed his medical across in Germany. He was never the paciest player, but probably if he's got, you know, if his fitness means he feels a medical, he's probably got, I'm sort of putting two and two together here, but he's probably then lost even more pace. Manager doesn't fancy him. I feel sorry for him. Then there's Ayeti, who isn't even making the bench in pre-season friendlies, but we're not getting him out the door. I suppose the thing is, saying we've seen this in the past, that what sometimes happens is, 3 or 4 days before the end of the transfer window, when clubs are looking for people, bodies in the door, that's when we can get people out on loan. There's talk about Mickey Johnson going away. There's and then obviously Ayeti has scored goals in the past, so probably someone will come in for him at the last minute and we'll get him out on loan. Any positions that you still want to strengthen, Saint?
The central defence worries me a wee bit. I mean, we were fortunate last season, and that Carter Vickers and Starfelt played, I think I'm off the top of my head, they played every game, certainly after that both of them made a partnership. They were an excellent partnership in the domestic game. They looked okay in Europe. And the hope was that partnership was going to get better. So it's really disappointing to see Starfelt missing the games, and that he certainly might miss Sunday. So that leaves a bit of a void, and I don't think...
Well, we've signed at a centre-half.
Yeah, we did, but I think at the moment he's playing the boy Welsh, and you'll get away with that to a degree in the domestic game. But really, I'm fearful should you get into a you know, we're in top four. Whoever we get in the Champions League is going to be 3 teams who essentially are better than us, and some ways they might be far better than us. And the idea of Welsh, you know, playing in central defence in the Champions League, is keys me to fear. So,
but then by that point, Starfelt will be fit, and the new guy, whose name I can't pronounce.
Yeah, so I'm not sure. Yeah, is it Jens?
Jens.
Yeah. So you'll have hope that you know. So by that point, Welsh should be 4th choice and a half. You would hope.
Yeah, I would actually like two centre halves in, because I think you need you need a strong sort of reserve player to take the place of first team players. That's often been our fault, that our 15-16 squad is good enough, but when you go beyond 15, the number 15 and 16, it begins to get a bit, you're a bit threadbare, and that's been the case for a few seasons. But then again, we can't in our league, we can't really have big squads like that, you know, because people don't want to, genuinely quality players don't want to come to Scotland, really. So,
well, I suppose the challenge is we're not an elite English Premiership team. So if we've got two centre halves, for argument's sake, if we're using that position, who are, say we believe that they are good enough to play Champions League football, well, how do we keep a third and a fourth choice centre half, poor of that standard, happy to be kicking around and not playing Champions League football? So it's really difficult have a drop off out of 16.
Get back to your point about positions. I agree with Duncan. I was looking for the, you know, a Wanyama type in the middle of the park that would protect the back four, because the way we play, and we've discussed this, you know, on WhatsApp, sort of the conversations, we're very, very open, and it makes really exciting football in Scottish football, against Scottish teams. But I'm really, really concerned that when you get into that Champions League, that, you know, we saw what happened with Brendan Rodgers a few years ago when he tried to go toe-to-toe with the likes of Barcelona and Bayern Munich, Paris Saint-Germain. It ended up really, really messy. Pardon the pun, but I don't want to see that happen to Ange. But I genuinely don't think he's going to change his system. There's nothing to indicate that man will go into European football and play Real Madrid in the Bernabeu and change his system to somehow stop Real Madrid from playing. He'll go there and he'll want to play Celtic's normal game. And there's something in that to be admired, but I think there's something very naive as well.
George, Lackey, what about yourself for how the summer's gone? What do you think of the signings? Anywhere? I mean, don't forget, we've still got a month left in the transfer window. So, you know, we don't play Champions League football for another 8 weeks, we've still got 4 weeks left in the transfer window. So any areas that you would like strengthened, happy with what we've done?
Well, I think that would be realistic. I think even the players that were bought, just listening to some of the transfers that are going on in the English Premiership at the moment and then across Europe, where they're paying £60-70 million for players, we can't compete with that at all. So I think in real terms, Europe this year will probably be something of a sideshow. I think it's important that we dominate at home and win the league again, because again, next year you go straight in to the Champions League. But I really don't think at the moment with the players we've got, we're really in a position to compete with the very best. But it'll be interesting to see how his team plays. And I think that's what he'll be interested in, because I think he sees it as a developmental project. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. So if it's a developmental project, Duncan, what are the areas that you think are going to develop? What are you looking forward to seeing this season that you think is going to get better?
I mean, I think any team, when you're starting a project or a development thing like that, the second season, you're a lot more fluid. All the players know. I mean, remember what it was like this time last year. It was an absolute shit show, sliding doors and folk in, and nobody knew each other. But now they've played the season together, they've won things together, they know how each other play, they know the characters and the personalities. I think we've been more fluid. My one concern is, I think that, and again, let's be honest, against anybody else other than Rangers, you can pretty much, we've got like 25 players that could play in that league. But I just thought when we played Rangers and when we go, we look quite a small team. Mm-hmm. And we do, when you see us on the pitch, we've not got a lot of height in the team at all. And he's not really signed anybody. I think the big centre-half is reasonably tall, but you see that the Argentinian left-back, he's tiny. I mean, he is really small as well. And we just look a wee bit, I think we could be a wee bit more physical, but that's not really Ange's game. And like you say there, he's got a plan A, and plan B is to do plan A better. So, but no, I'm looking forward to it. I'm really, really excited. And it's got a feel. I was chatting about this when I was away last week when we were in Poland. I was saying to my kids, this feel, when Martin O'Neill arrived, there was a, as Paul McStay would say, a buzz about the place when Martin arrived. And it was exactly the same when Brendan arrives. And there's a wee bit of a feeling with that, with Ange, that we're, I don't know, I've just got a, I mean, I'm a glass half full sort of guy anyway, but I've got a real, real high hope that we're going to do some good things over the next 2 or 3 years.
We all keep talking about what the squad and the team was at the beginning of last season. I'm just looking, Lackey, at the starting 11 for the first game of last season away at Tynecastle. And to be fair, a game where we had 80, I always go on about this, we had 80% possession. Hearts were booing their team off the park. We had a goal chopped off at one each to make it 2-1 that should have been kept on. And the team for that game, I'm actually surprised at how many of the players could start this Saturday that were in that team. It's slightly better than I remember. The team was Bain, Ralston, who could start, Taylor, who could start, Beaton, Starfelt, who he's only not starting through injury, Turnbull, who could start, who Christie came on for Turnbull, Forrest, who could start. Sorrow started that game in the first game of the season. And, you know, by the end of the season was a million miles away, and obviously he's gone. He was substituted and Rogic came on. So there's two people gone. Abada started and Kyogo came on for Abada, and we had literally just signed Kyogo. Yeah. Callum McGregor was in the team and Edward was up front. The bench is where you can start to see the difference. Montgomery, Ayeti, Kyogo that I just mentioned, Rogic, Welsh, Christian Barkas. So that was the team. So what are your thoughts on what are you looking forward to seeing change and develop in this season? Because obviously there's a massive change in development of the way the team played from that opening game of the season, the 31st of July last season to Christmas time. So what are you expecting the first 6 months?
Well, I expect them to dominate in the league, because I think they're a far better team than anybody else, with the possible exception of the Rangers. And I think the competition from him came a lot through physical strength. As Duncan refers to, they were a big team and we were a wee team. And I think they played well against them, but they had a sort of physical edge that we really didn't match. But against all the other teams in Scotland, I thought we were far superior. Even from the first game, I agree with you, I thought Celtic played them off the park that night. And we were very unlucky to lose. And there was a hysteria come out of it from the press and the media. Oh, we're going to have a bad season. But, I mean, he was patient and things eventually came around and he got players in. So I expect them still to dominate in Scotland. But it'll be interesting to see if they can take that thrilling football into Europe. Because you mentioned, Duncan mentioned Rodgers' team. But the gap between the top teams in Europe and us then is bigger than, wasn't as big as the gap now. I mean, some of those top teams are spending untold millions to buy the best players. And if we're thrown in against them and we compete, I think we'll be doing very well. But I still think in Scotland, we should hope to be the dominant force, because we'll get better players than everybody else. By the way, just as a wee reminder, do you remember that we did a podcast when we were talking about all those loan players during the disastrous season? And I asked you, did you really think that Kenny was an upgrade on Anthony Ralston? And I think Anthony Ralston has proved me right. He was a better player than he was given credit for. But he wasn't given a chance.
I always go on about, I remember being told that Brendan Rodgers really had high hopes for Ralston. Now, I really like Ralston. I think he's of limited ability when we get to play Champions League football. I don't think he's there, but I am really proud of as a young player who's come through the system and despite everything has continued to improve. I think saying, I don't know if you agree with me, I think as supporters sometimes we can be really guilty of a player makes his debut at 18, 19, and if he's not good enough by 19 and a half, we write him off. Mm-hmm. It's like saying, I don't know if you agree with me that we're all guilty of this as supporters, of forgetting that, you know, I don't know what you were like in your work at 19 and a half, but I was better at my job at 25 than, well, I was still at uni at 19 and a half, but I was better at my job at 25 than I would have been at 19 and a half, and I was better at my job at 30 than I was at 25. That sometimes the supporters were really poor for allowing people the ability to grow and develop and get better. We write people off very early.
I think that's a generation thing.
There was a very interesting discussion last night on Twitter where Eddie suggested that we were overly hard on Mikey Johnson, and he was slaughtered for it. And yeah,
Mikey Johnson needs to go on loan. He needs to go and play 30 or 40 games of football.
Yes.
I just, it's got to be last chance saloon for him at Celtic. I don't know if he goes out on loan. And other than like Callum McGregor and Ryan Christie, I kind of think of any other real good loans that work out. It's normally the start of you leaving. But on the Greg Taylor thing, I mean, I'll put my hand up. If somebody said to me 2 years ago that Greg Taylor was going to be playing how he's playing now, I'd have said, no chance. Ralston, sorry. I think Ralston, I would have said 18 months ago, Ralston's a Motherwell player. Mm-hmm. I'd have said that 18 months ago. But he had a good season. He's had one decent season. I'm interested to see how he is this season. As it will be with a lot of these boys, especially the Japanese lads. It's always tough in your second season. Folk work out how to play you. And the surprise package. But I know I've been really impressed with Ralston. But I'll be very, very surprised if Mikey Johnson goes on to be a big player for Celtic.
I think you should go out and loan. Aye. I don't think I send him out and loan with the option to buy till we see how he gets on. Aye. You know, because he could go away and with game time, he might actually develop into the player we thought he would be, because he has bags of ability, but he lacks confidence. And his decision making's poor because he's always trying too hard. Now, Callum McGregor prospered away from Celtic Park. But even when he came back, there were a lot of people who didn't want to see him near the team. So you need a wee bit of bottle to make that step.
We've got a lot of wingers in that team. How do you see? But imagine seeing Mikey Johnson get anywhere near that team.
Not at the moment. But I would argue if he was getting his 40 games a season, it would mean that he's actually doing well for another club. He has probably got more ability, pure ability, than Abada, who I love. But he's just a very direct, straightforward winger. But Johnson's a skillful player.
And that's the thing about Abada. You're saying about the age. You forgot as well, at the beginning of the season, folk were having a go at Abada. He was 19 at the start of last season, 19 years old.
I love Abada. I think he's great. But I do think Johnson has more to offer than we've ever seen.
Your point there, Duncan, about Abada being 19, I mean, that's the other thing that, again, I think sometimes we as supporters can all be guilty of, is Abada, not only is he 19, he's moved from a completely different culture into the UK. I mean, again, there was an interview with Jota about, you know, what were the things you have to get used to about living in Scotland. And one of these things was having my evening meal at 6 o'clock at night. Because I was used to having it at 10 o'clock at night. Now, that might not sound a major thing, but if you're an athlete that's supposed to be performing at an elite level, and one minute you're having an evening meal at 6 o'clock at night, and at 10 o'clock at night, the next minute you're having it at 6 o'clock at night, and just everything. Being 19 years of age and changing country, and people expect that you can just do that and it'll all be fine. I think
Get back to what we were saying there about young players coming in. See if you go back to the 80s and you're the likes of Pat Bonner, Mark Reid, Charlie Nicholas, Paul McStay, all broke through into the team. Charlie and Paul were exceptional talents and they'd have walked into any Celtic team at any given time. But the point I'm making here is the supporters were used to, up to that point, that the club rearing their own players. So it was a natural progression. If you had an injury, everybody would say, who's in the reserves? And the guy who was in the reserves came in and got a run in the first team. And the fans showed a wee bit of patience because that was the way we operated in those days. But since probably in the modern age, since Fergus took over and we began to look abroad for players and pay more money in transfers for players, there isn't the same patience for younger players now when they come into the team. Because a young guy coming in now, if he has a couple of bad games, the fans just want him hunted. But they'll be happy to bring in a foreign player and give them time more than the young boy coming through the youth system. And I think that's a wee bit unfair. And I think the pressure on young players at Celtic to get into the first team and perform is enormous, far more than it used to be in the old days, because you literally know as soon as you make a mistake, you'll get left out of the team. Because there'll be such a clamour from the supporters to you know, that he's not good enough, get him out of the team. You know, sign a guy for Germany, sign a guy for Portugal. And I think that's part of the reason why our youth system has went back the way in the last 10, 20 years, because we don't have any patience with homemade talent.
I think, if you remember last year when Abada was signed, before a ball was kicked, they were all moaning on the web about how did they sign, how it's to do with the agent. They always go to the same agent. And they were dishing him before he kicked a ball. Because they're very negative, the Celtic support. I know in some ways they're very supportive, but in other ways they're very dismissive of players. And it was good for Abada that he scored a few goals early on and got a wee bit of belief about him. But they're so ready to dismiss players.
The other thing about last season that really pleased me was we signed players who, I'll be honest, I hadn't heard of them, right? And I'll mention them in a wee minute, that the guys I'm talking about. And I think I'm always of the opinion that somebody coming into the Scottish game and joining Celtic, if they see Celtic as a step up, they're going to do well. But see somebody like Ayeti or Barkas coming for big clubs to Scottish football, they don't see us as a step up. So I think they lose the motivation. Now, I remember that the night we lost to Rangers at Ibrox, it was late August, and I had COVID at the time, by the way, and I had it bad. And I was lying in the living room trying to isolate for the rest of the family, and I was feeling really sorry for myself because I'm feeling like shit, and we get beat with Rangers, right? It doesn't get much worse. Well, the text started coming in for Harry and for Eddie Pearson. And the first one comes in and says, Carter Vickers on loan for Spurs. And I'm thinking, oh no, never heard him. Or I say, this is desperate stuff. And then the next one comes in, Jota from Portugal, for Benfica on loan. And I'm thinking, another loan. And then the third one that came in was Jackie Marcus from a relegated team in the Dutch league. And, you know, I was so despondent that night, really, really depressed, that I thought that this is going to be the worst season of all time. These guys are duds. But you know, it's a lesson to myself. And George made a good point there about Abada. I was a wee bit like that as well, with, you know, the agent thing, that the Israeli thing, where the Israeli players all come for the same agent. But, you know, whoever did the transfer dealings last season, whether it was Ange or whether it was a mix of people, they had their finger in the pulse, because these guys were all good. You know, the only signing that we really had that you could really take exception to, and I think there was an element of desperation because it came at the end, was James McCarthy. Mm. Whoever he did a four-year deal, that's not looking good. But see, in fairness, if that's the only mistake we made, the rest of the signings were spot on.
The funny thing is, he's the one player you've heard of.
Yeah.
I'm in Joe Hart.
Yeah.
The days of us signing players that you've heard of are gone. I don't know anybody. I mean, some of the young team, they know everything because they're all over FIFA and they know. You don't sign a player. Like you say, McCarthy and Hart are different in the sort of the twilight of their careers, but you bring in players from abroad that you've heard of. There wasn't a bad player that he signed last year, and I get the feeling that he pretty much did the recruitment himself. And he's other than Eddie Gucci, who I've not really seen much of, everybody was a winner. So if he can get three or four of the good ones this year, then we'll be in a stronger position. See, we've not lost anybody. I know anybody that we didn't want to lose. Normally, I don't know the last time that happened. There's always somebody leaving. And that'll be next year.
I found it interesting tonight on Twitter or on a couple of these podcasts where they get comments at the side and folk are picking their team for Saturday and they don't have Kyogo in the team. And I'm sitting thinking, why? You know, the guy's the best player by a mile last season, by a country mile.
You can't argue with that, but it's, I'm not sure that Kyogo and Giakoumakis play in the same team.
Yes, I know that, but my point is, last year, if you suggested to anybody that you would put a team in the park and Kyogo wouldn't be in it, they'd have thought you were stupid, because he was the best player we had by a distance.
Very different players.
I'm not comparing them as players. And obviously different things, but the principle is reminds me of between Giakoumakis and Kyogo. It reminds me of the dilemma between playing Sutton and Hartson. Up front, in that Hartson scored goals, but I would always prefer Sutton in the team. But you couldn't criticise the manager for playing Hartson in the team, because when Hartson played in the team, he scored goals. You know, it was one of those dilemmas with Giakoumakis. I think for me, it's as much to do with, you mentioned saying there's a core group of about 16 players that are our key first team players. If he's wanting to play this very high energy, high pressing game, particularly amongst the front three players, he's going to need six players for those front three positions, because he's going to need to be taking them out and putting them back in, because the amount of energy they are using in playing those, in playing that high press, means that if you play them too much, you'll risk an injury with them. And so I'm actually pretty comfortable whether he plays Kyogo or Giakoumakis and plays one of them for 60 minutes and then puts the other in.
I don't disagree with that. I think, you know, what Duncan was saying is right. But it was the idea that you would be picking a Celtic team, you start a new season, and you wouldn't have Kyogo in the team, I found bizarre. Because I would have played Kyogo and Maeda and these guys up front and then brought Giakoumakis on against a tiring defence rather than the other way about.
For what it's worth, I think I've seen Kyogo play three halves of football. He's been nowhere. Now, I know it doesn't matter, it's pre-season, but he's not really been at it in the games that I've seen at all. Maeda, I just love. I've never seen a football player like him. I'm not sure how actually good a player he is. He's an absolute, like, he's a pest in the energy from him. But he's certainly not a finisher. But I think Kyogo's got to start. He's in anybody's team. If he's fit, he's in anybody's team, surely.
But I agree with you. It's not a case of either or. It's a case of when you play them both. Uh-huh. You could play them together, but you're going to play them both at some point in the game, because
And it is, it's less about, Brendan Rodgers used to say, it's not necessarily your start. It's the team that finishes the game is as important as the team that starts it. Uh-huh. But I like Giakoumakis. He reminds me a wee bit of Gary Hooper. He's not going to score loads of like worldly, like great goals, but he'll get you a shed load of goals.
Yeah.
Somebody stuck a video at the end of last season on, it was on Twitter, and it was Giakoumakis' 13 league goals that he'd scored. And there was only one of them wasn't a one-touch finish.
Oh, yeah.
And the one that wasn't a one-touch finish, he'd meant it to be a one-touch finish. The keeper had saved it. The ball came back out to him. He controlled it and then hit it. So it's a difficult one for picking those ones. But it's a good dilemma to have six people for the three positions. Saint, what's your thoughts on James Forrest, out of those six positions, where do you see Forrest?
I think we need to appreciate that Forrest, in terms of performance, I don't think he's going to be the player that he was, because he's of a certain age now. And I think a player like James, who relied so much on pace, that was his biggest asset. I mean, I don't want to decry him as a player, because he was a clever player. and he was great at getting goals for wide positions, which is a great benefit to the team. But I think now that he's getting on a wee bit and he's maybe lost that burst of pace, he'll be used maybe less and less. You know, I think Abada is going to be the guy in the right flank who will be the first choice. Now, I think he's overtaking James Forrest slightly. But James Forrest is still a good man to have in terms of experience. He's a good man to have in terms of bringing into the team. If something was to happen to Abada, Forrest would be able to step in. And you know that he would do a good job. But I just feel that now that he's over 30, I think he's 31 now, James Forrest, that I just don't think he's got that burst that he used to have that was his biggest asset. So he'll maybe need to change his game a wee bit and start playing with the head a wee bit more rather than the legs. But he gave him a new contract, so Ange must be pleased to have him there. I just don't think he's going to be used as much as what he has done with previous managers.
I mean, Ange must want him there, because all the chat I've heard with Ange, with Tom Rogic and Beaton was, look, guys, he's only really part of this. He's been here, he's been great servants, but you're not going to play much. So if he's wanting to go, he can go. You'd imagine that he wouldn't have sugarcoated it if he thought that about James Forrest as well. I think it's always easy with James Forrest because, you know, he bounced so long. Think about the trophies that he's won. He'd be one of those players that you'd really miss if he wasn't around. I mean, I really like him. I get a wee bit embarrassed by the lack of love that we show for him. I mean, the boy's not even got a song. He's been there forever and he's not even got a song. And folk
does that tie in with what I was saying earlier there about young guys coming into the team don't get appreciated? They don't really get a chance. But see if James Forrest was Scandinavian or he was Eastern European or something. But as you say there, the songs would be raining down off the stands.
Aye. No, 100%.
So we take them for granted, very much.
I agree with what Stephen says, though. I thought about this, that it would be interesting to see, and I don't mean this to sound dismissive of him, if James Forrest has the game intelligence to adapt the way he plays. Because he's a sufficient ability to be no longer the flying winger, but a more thoughtful and creative player in different ways. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He has the ability, but does he have the craft to do it? I mean, if you remember, I'm not comparing him to John Robertson at his best, but John Robertson was never a flying machine when he played for Nottingham Forest. He was never that quick. He was the wee fat guy, but he was very clever. And if James Forrest adapts to become that type of player, he'll be a real asset.
The one that I would compare James Forrest to is Bobby Lennox. And as much as when Bobby was at his peak, he was lightning fast. That was his, again, he was a terrific player. But the most people, when they think back of Bobby Lennox, they think back to the burst of speed that he had. So in later seasons, Bobby had a real Indian summer in his career. But as George says there, he learned to play with the head. He knew that he couldn't keep up the burst of pace. So he played sparingly. But he was such a great asset to us in the late 70s, right up to the 1980 Cup final. And it was only injury that called the halt to Bobby Lennox's career. So I think James Forrest can maybe take a wee bit of heart for that. And as much as it's been done in the past, and I think if James goes down that road of playing a wee bit more with the head rather than the legs, that then he can still contribute.
Yeah.
So Duncan, the midfield of Celtic under Ange, we talked about this beginning. It's going to be great going forward in domestic football. My only concern about it is when we get to Champions League. But you know, we've still got 4 weeks left in the transfer window before that. What do you see as the best midfield out of the players that are currently there at the team?
I mean, like Callum McGregor starts every game, right? I mean, he's just a given. He's an absolute Rolls Royce, that boy. He starts every game. My big hope, my sort of tip for the season for it to be our best player is O'Reilly. I really like O'Reilly. I think he looks like a proper player. I think he's going to be in there as well. And I think the biggest surprise this year might be this guy, Mui or Moy. I don't know how you say it. A couple of people said to me, don't get me wrong, he's batshit crazy by all accounts. Like, he's as bright as 2 o'clock in the morning. He's already did a fight up at Lennox Town. But I've heard that if he can get, he could be a real surprise package for us this year. But I think McGregor and O'Reilly, I don't see Turnbull starting a lot of games. I don't really see it. And I'd love to see McCarthy, because there's a great player in McCarthy, but he's just, he's not really shown us it. And I don't know if he's had a good pre-season or whether his legs are done or what, but I really hope that we see a lot more of him this season as well. Because he is a player, albeit he's maybe the twilight of his career.
You got to remember, before Turnbull got injured, he played every week.
Mm-hmm. I must admit, I'm not a fan of Turnbull.
Hands like Turnbull.
He's slower than me. He's slower than a week in jail. He can't go by a man. He can't actually go by a man.
He has skill.
I don't think he does.
I think
it was a game last season. It was against the Livingston game. Celtic Park. We had
Jackie Marcus missed the penalty.
And I remember, I'm sure it was that one where I remember watching and I suddenly thought, I know who David Turnbull is. He's Stephen Pearson. Looks really, really good for Motherwell. Mm. But when we got the ball and he kept doing nothing specific with it. The only thing he wanted to do was shoot with it or pass sideways. He wasn't, you know, we were camped outside the Livingston, you know, 30 yards from the Livingston goal, and all he was wanting to do was pass sideways. Mm-hmm. Had no ability to create, well, didn't appear to have any ability to do any sort of forward creative pass with it.
Did anybody do anything that day?
No, but the problem was he was the number 10 and the ball kept coming to him as the guy to do something that he was turning going sideways. Mm-hmm. That was the issue. And that's when I thought, that's where you are. You're Stephen Pearson, so you'll have the odd game in domestic football where you'll look pretty good. I'm hoping I'm wrong, but I don't see it in him. I really don't.
I'm not suggesting that he'll be the first pick. I think Hatate's a far, far better player than him. And I think, I don't know, I disagree with Duncan. I think Hatate is probably a better player than O'Reilly. Mm-hmm. But we'll see.
No, I think the good thing here is that we're all talking about different types of players and you know, people can contribute this, that, and the next thing. That's the one area of the team I think we're strong in. Because you've got McGregor there, you've got Hatate, you've got O'Reilly, you've got Turnbull to come in, you've got Moy, and you've got McCarthy as well. So it is the one area of the side that I'm confident that no matter who we put out, the three that we put into that role, we'll do is a good turn and we'll be quality players. But I don't think we have that strength in other areas.
Actually, see, as we're talking about this, well, you say not got that strength in other areas. I think we've got that strength up front as well, because in the three positions
defense,
up front. Yeah, so basically, you've got it in defence. And as we were talking about that point you made earlier, Duncan, that I agree with, that Ange's system is plan A is not working, plan B is to try plan A harder. Yes. But I was also thinking, as we're talking through the players there, but within that, there is a slight difference to each of the players that might play in certain positions. So Abada can play wide right and he beats a man with pace. Jota can play wide right and he's got pace, but he also, it's trickery. Maeda can play wide left and he just presses people to death. Jota sometimes plays wide left and it's trickery that he beats people with. So the one good thing as well on you saying they're saying we've got people for positions that I like is, whilst it's all roughly the same system that Ange's wanting to play, there is a slight nuance to the difference between who plays in those different positions. Mm. So the midfield is slightly different with O'Reilly, Hatate and McGregor than it is with McGregor, Hatate and Turnbull, for example, and Giamakis playing up front instead of Kyogo is slightly different. Kyogo playing wide left as opposed to Maeda playing wide left gives a different dynamic as well to it. So there is something to it. So saying we've starting the season in four trophies. Mm. Let's go through them domestically. What are you expecting out of the three domestic trophies? What are you expecting us to attain this season?
Well, I'm hoping that we're going to have at least what we had the last season, which is 2 out of 3 of them. I don't have any preference between the League Cup and the Scottish Cup. The League is, I think George already alluded to earlier there, the League is the most important given the fact that it's Champions League again, and it's the huge amount of money that goes with it, and that's what makes it so important. And I think Duncan also made a good point, and we all agree on it. It's brilliant to get the summer without the qualifiers on the horizon, because those are the most stressful games of the season. I mean, you're sort of smiling there, Harry. Like, I remember the night that we get put out with Ferenc Varos, was it 2 or 3 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And Anthony came in for Bratislava. And you know, I'm not being funny, but we were stressed out we're not that night, because the frustration was just enormous. And to take that and put it to the side and not have that and just get right into the Champions, no matter how good the Champions League is, they play qualifiers. But going back to what you were saying there, like I'm hoping for 2 or 3 of the trophies, but one of them's got to be the League.
Lackey, what's your thoughts on the 3 domestic trophies? What we're going to do, achieve, attain?
Well, I agree with Stephen. I think two would be a good season domestically, but my preference would always be the Scottish Cup, because you finish the season on a high, mm-hmm. as well as winning the League. So if I had the option of if I could only have 2 of them, I'd have the League and the Scottish Cup.
Duncan, what's your expectations on domestic success this season?
I mean, the League's the most important thing for me every season, for various different reasons. You've just given them the other bit of Champions League, and the fact that you're straight into groups again. You like how you do your transfer business, how we've done it this summer. And let's face it, it gives you the bragging rights in the town, doesn't it? I mean, you're the number one team. It's got to be the League. The League Cup, I'm lucky there. It's League Cup only matters to me if you win the Scottish Cup and the League as well. It's only really part of a treble. But right now, if somebody said to me that we just win the League domestically next year, I'd bite your hand off of that. That is the absolute priority for me. But I don't see any reason why we don't get all 3.
Interestingly, the last few managers we've had, they've won the League Cup as their first ever trophy. And then the second season onwards is when they've started resting players for the League Cup. It's almost as if I need to make sure the fans are on side, get a trophy in the bag, and then move forward. And then thereafter, know that first about the League Cup.
We shouldn't underestimate the importance of the League Cup last season, because it gave us a huge boost. And I don't just mean the fans. You could see the belief in the players beginning to flow through them. When they saw at Hampden that day, when we beat Hibs in that atmosphere, it was terrific. That this is what being a successful Celtic player feels like, and it was a huge boost at an important time of the season, and I would never underestimate the League Cup last season. There's a part of me thinks if I hadn't won the League Cup, if I'd lost to Hibs that day, that then the worry is that we might not have the momentum we had later in the season in the League, and I think that was a launching pad to do better things, and that's what happened.
Then the term season, when we won the League Cup at Ibrox, or the Coca-Cola Cup at Ibrox that day, it got us on a roll. We really began to believe they could do something.
That was our first League Cup for 15 years that day. That was such an important trophy.
So the other thing that you guys have mentioned, Duncan, by the time the Champions League draw takes place for the group stages, last season we played 6 games in Europe. This season, when the groups, we won't have played a single one. So, what's your expectation, hope, fears for the Champions League?
I love it. But somebody said earlier, it's no fun when you're going and get humped 5 and 6. After the big teams. I love the Champions League, I love the music. For me, it's the best atmosphere ever at Celtic Park's of Champions League. Now, I'm very excited about the draw. They're all good teams. I guess you're looking to get the weakest team over that team that beat Rangers and that Frankfurt, because they're in pot one. So if you want to get but everybody else are like absolute giants. I want us to get Real Madrid. I've not seen us play Real Madrid compete. I want to be sat in the Bernabeu and watching Celtic play Real Madrid. I'd be careful what I wish for, but I'm not wanting Barcelona or Milan again. I really would like Real Madrid. But the reality is, I don't want us to get humped. And it would be great to actually, I don't like saying this, but it would be great to finish third and get in the Europa League.
Can I come in here with a bit of breaking news?
Yes.
Just the message that says, tonight Olympiacos were pumped out of the Champions League qualifiers as they were ranked above us on the 10-year coefficient. The result should mean Celtic get an extra £950,000 approximately from the coefficient payment.
That's all right.
Well, and the point I want to make there as well is, just as what we said, how hard it is to come through the qualifiers.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a stress fest. It's unbelievable.
I always thought as well, I had a heated conversation with someone at Celtic during the summer, because I think our five-year target should be with it to be a European final. I've been saying this for quite some time. Our five-year target should be to be in a European final within 5 years. And that's the only frustration I've got about Rangers being in a European final, because I believe that that was possible and they've gone and shown it. And again, that point was dismissed by the person I was speaking to about it. But I think if you're in it, you've got to be aiming for that sort of level. And every, you know, it's like everything about what our club should be looking to achieve should be to get into a European final. It's like that famous John Kennedy speaking to the guy at NASA. What do you do? The janitor guy. I help put rockets on the moon. Everybody at Celtic, their job should be, I help Celtic get to a European, and my job is to help Celtic get to a European final. And that's where I think we should be aiming. And so, Duncan, there's a part of me wants to finish third, and then we can drop down to the Europa League and then give the Europa League a go. Because I see no reason why we shouldn't be aspiring for that. I also want to play Real Madrid, because when we got them in 1980, it was two tickets per person when you went to buy tickets. So my dad wasn't well. My mum went with one of my older brothers, because that was the only two tickets for the family. So that was 1980. So I want to go and see Celtic play Real Madrid, because I didn't get 42 years ago.
Do you remember that story of the Rangers 9-in-a-row team when they brought in non-sports psychologists and they asked them all who thought they would win the league, and they all put their hands up. And then he said, who thinks you'll win the Scottish Cup? And they all put their hands up. Who thinks you'll win the treble? All put their hands up. He says, how many of you think you'll win the Champions League? And they have to put their hands up. He says, that's why you'll never win it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was the point I was going to make about the stressful qualifiers. So Brendan always made the point, he thought Celtic's problem was because just getting to the group stages was the achievement that we were looking to achieve. One, that's what made the qualifiers so stressful. And two, that's why we performed poorly once we got there, because we'd achieved our target. We'd got there, we'd made it. So my point on your point of hands up, my point was, if I imagine Wanda was running Celtic, my first meeting when I stood up there would be, we're setting a target for us to be in a European final and to coincide with the 60th anniversary of getting to Lisbon.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody in this, I'd have all staff there, if anybody in this room doesn't think that's possible, have a conversation with me at the end, we'll work out a severance payment. That's how much I believe that we should be going for being in a European final. And I don't see why we can't.
Well, it proved that we can. I mean, let's face it, Rangers were in one a couple of months ago. We were a better team than Rangers.
And
they were beating big teams, and they were beating them well.
Yep.
So there's no question we can, because they were.
So
they did in the knockout stages. But in actual fact, we had more points than they did in the section. Mm-hmm. We just did the luck of the draw. And we haven't had much luck in the draws in recent seasons.
You can say on an individual basis, Lackey, you can say it's luck. But when it happens consistently, then it's no longer luck.
No, I'm not saying it's luck, but we haven't had many good draws. Duncan made the point there, if we get a good draw, we might progress.
But it's always a dilemma in Champions League football, isn't it, Duncan? Do you want a sexy draw, or do you want a draw that you can qualify out of?
I know. I mean, they're all, like I say, other than Frankfurt, the pot one seeds are all like massive teams. And I quite like if we get an English team as well. I like that wee edge as well. And I'd be quite happy. I mean, maybe not so much Liverpool or Man City, but the other teams that are in it, why would we know? Give them a good run for their money. And you see, like, realistically, Europa League is our level. If we can get a good Champions League and 6 points, I would imagine, be enough for third, I would imagine. And then get into Europa League and have a run at that, then I'd be happy with that. But no, I want to be sat in the Bernabeu, the 11th tier or whatever it is, and see Celtic playing. I'll be gutted because they're probably not playing hoops, but I want to be there.
So one sexy team and two other teams who've got a chance again. So pot one teams as it stands are Real Madrid, Eintracht Frankfurt, Man City, AC Milan, Bayern Munich, PSG, Porto and Ajax. Now, getting back to your point, Duncan, if you want a team that you can beat, you want Eintracht Frankfurt.
Aye.
I'm not that fussed about Man City, we played them. I'm not that fussed about Milan, we played them umpteen times. I'm not that fussed about Bayern Munich, played them. PSG played them. Porto played them. Ajax played them. So Real Madrid, it's Real Madrid or Eintracht Frankfurt. That's the two from pot one. Pot two, Liverpool, Chelsea. I mean, pot two.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, Liverpool, Chelsea, Barca.
I'm away to get the Sudocrine.
Liverpool, Chelsea, Barca, Juventus, Atletico Madrid, Seville, Leipzig, Tottenham. Pot three, Dortmund, Salzburg, Shakhtar Donetsk, Inter, Napoli, Benfica, Sporting Lisbon, Bayer Leverkusen.
Napoli. A good wee trip.
Yeah, so...
There's a hell of a group of death in there, isn't there?
Well, there is. Do you know, there is a group of death, and there is a group that you think is not quite so death. It's not quite so deathly. So you'd like to think that maybe there's some teams we could get some points at home and maybe do something with, but who knows. So before we go, Saints had to go and pick their family up. So before we go, we've got the game on Sunday at 4 o'clock, or is it 4:30?
Can't remember what.
4:30. Okay. Oh, there's two quick things I want to talk about before we go. Point number one, I don't know, Lackey, if you've been looking online, Duncan, if you've been looking online with the new banners around Celtic Park, I still refer to them as Rangers End and Celtic End. The Rangers End has got the Celtic Park, and it's just got big Billy McNeil lifting the European Cup, and it says where legends are made. Today, they've started on the other side with Callum McGregor, and underneath it says, "This is Paradise." Do you have any thoughts about the banners, Duncan?
I've not seen them. I don't go online much, but I've not seen them. I've noticed that they were all down and they were obviously redoing it. But no, I think more generic stuff rather than individual players. No doubt there'll be some reference to Ange and "We Never Stop." That seems to be
I don't believe that's going to be. No, I don't believe that's going to be on any of the banners. Because that's a season slogan. So obviously they want to change it and the banners would have to stay up.
Big picture of Peter Law, so that when he's announced being chairman, the big Peter Law banner.
I'm not sure Peter will be getting appointed chairman.
I don't know. I genuinely don't know here. That's a lot of chat. But no, I've not seen the banners, the new ones. And it would just be nice going down there on Sunday. I mean, I wish it wasn't Sunday at 4:30. I mean, that's a wee bit annoying. But it'll be nice going down there if we get a good bit of weather and just that buzz. I'm like away in at Christmas, first day of the season, getting up that Celtic way and just really like super excited for the whole thing. Really am.
The other fantastic thing for the first game of the season. You can get the train there, but you can't get the train back.
That's true.
There's engineering works, because there's nothing else happening. It's not like the Marnock and Bryson Station run at capacity on every Celtic home day.
I think they actually said on any given Sunday that was the last train.
Well, there's no train back.
The Rocks, the basketball games, they tend to be 5 o'clock on Sunday and there's no trains after that. You can't get a train after a Rocks game that are on Sunday. I mean, I don't even think there's a single bus goes along London Road. No. I don't know, as a single bus that goes along London Road, but the trains and everything, they're all over the shop, aren't they?
Well, so anybody listening to this, you can get the train there, but you can't get it back. So walking to the city centre, because as Duncan says, there's no buses either. When they were trying to do away with the parking within a 1 mile radius of Celtic Park, and I understand why. Anybody who I park down the sort of far end of Springfield Road, anybody who cuts through the Athletes Village housing on a match day will know that there are people who are utterly obnoxious in how they park their car. And if there was ever an emergency vehicle needed to get down that street, then your car's getting smashed up to buggery because it's impossible to park. So I understand the reasons, but I ended up having discussions with people at Glasgow City Council. They estimated there were 7,500 cars parked within a 1 mile radius. And so that would be taking, even at two people a car, that's taking 15,000 people out of. And I said, how do you get the 15,000 people there? Well, they'll need to take public transport. Well, the trains run at capacity, so they'll not be going on the trains, because I previously had a conversation with ScotRail. So the trains run at capacity, they'll not be going in the trains. Well, they'll need to put the buses on, and I can't be bothered doing the mental arithmetic here, but I remember speaking to the person and measuring on Google Maps as I was speaking to them. You would just basically have a line of buses from Celtic Park into town, and people would have got on one door, walked the length of the bus, got back off, walked on to the next bus, because the amount of buses you would have been needed to have, I think it was something like 400 buses or something to accommodate the number of people who'd have been dislodged out of the cars. So there are challenges getting to and from the game on Sunday. So what's your expectation for the score, Lackey, having covered off those 2 points? Oh, have you seen the banners, Lackey, any of the chat online about the banners?
I've seen the ones that were put up earlier in the week. I thought they looked really tidy. I really liked them.
Yeah, so we'll get to see the new banners. So scoreline, what's your expectation of scoreline on Sunday, Lackey?
Like 3-0.
And who's the scorers?
Kyogo.
All three?
Giakoumakis and Abada.
Did Kyogo not score a hat-trick on his Celtic debut at Celtic Park? Or his debut at Celtic Park?
Kyogo did, yeah.
He did. He did, yeah, I think he did. Yeah, he did. So, Duncan, scoreline for Sunday.
I was actually going to say 3-0. I mean, to be fair, I think Celtic's going to win every game 3-0. Doesn't matter who they're playing. But no, I'm going to say 2-0. I actually think Aberdeen have been a decent team this year. The occasion, I think no, 2-0 when it should have been 5 or 6. Clean sheet. Kyogo, and I'm going to go left field and say like Carton Vickers, a header.
Right. And since this is a pre-season prediction podcast, very quickly, I want you to run through, Duncan, every team's position in the finishing in the SPFL this season. Where are they going to finish?
That'd be Celtic, Rangers, Aberdeen, Hearts, Dundee United, Motherwell, St Mirren, St Johnson, Kilmarnock.
Hibs.
I thought I had Hibs up there. You'll do all right.
So this is the problem, actually, to demonstrate. The reason I was doing this was to demonstrate how much we care less about the rest of Scottish football. Because if anybody asks you to do this without the teams written in front of you, you start to forget who the teams are in the top flight.
But I think it's a good league. I like the fact that it's got the proper teams. It's got Celtic, Rangers, Hibs, Hearts, Aberdeen, Dundee United. That's the 6 big teams, right? And that they're all there. I know Hibs are having a wee bit of a wobble. I think they'll be all right. I think all 6, that'll be the top 6.
The thing is, the Hibs have got off to a very poor start, and I have a friend at the golf who's a very keen St Mirren supporter. His sons are Tim's, but he loves St Mirren, and he says they're going to get relegated because he thinks the manager's hopeless.
I've come across a couple of St Mirren fans who think they're going to get relegated. So, and where are Thistle going to finish, Duncan?
Thistle won the championship. After they're going to beat Arbroath, and I was desperate for them to get Celtic and Rangers away in the League Cup draw the other day, but they've got Arbroath at home. We'll beat Arbroath, then we'll get Celtic away. I'm not going to go to that game. I'll get to jail if I go to that game. No, but I think they're in a strong position this year. They're a better team than they were last year. I think it's a weaker league, so high hopes for Thistle this season. And we'll sign well.
I just need to have a look and see who's in the table. So Arbroath, Ayr, Cove Rangers?
Aye.
Are these one of these cash pump teams? I'm not expecting you to comment on that.
They're a big, they've got a lot of dough. And as in their name, it's quite a heavy Rangers vibe up there when you go in. It's like everything's like red, white and blue. And it was Paul Hartley's father-in-law, actually, that owns it.
Aye.
He was manager there.
Yeah,
Queen's Park the championship as well. Willie Haw, he's thrown a lot of money.
Oh, I was forgetting about Queen's Park. Yeah, they're matchups.
Yeah, I mean, they from what I'm hearing, they're throwing a lot of money about, like £2,000 and £3,000 a week for players. And I don't know who goes to watch Queen's Park in all honesty. I don't know where they're going to get their fans from.
They haven't finished Leicester Hampden yet, have they?
I was up at the Liam Gallagher gig the other week there, and it's nowhere near ready. I mean, they're putting. Spending £800,000 on a pitch.
I think there's been some dispute. It's sort of paused. The stands and terraces have sort of paused because it's been going on for like 2 years. I think there's been some dispute over it. But yeah, I forgot Queen's Park were in the championship. So yes, they're my tip for at least a playoff position.
The playoffs are hard. Unless you win that league, they make it so hard for you to go up in the playoffs. And of Dundee are coming down as well. So that they'll be... They'll be a strong, because they'll have quite a good budget. So, it'll be a good season.
Okay.
Oh, I forgot. Dundee are playing Patrick. Patrick Thistle. Yeah. Dundee have printed tickets that say Patrick Thistle.
Yeah.
Honestly.
I just wonder if South qualify. I wasn't aware they'd win any games.
They must have done.
I mean, they could beat by Annan in the first game. I don't think they beat St Johnson.
Because all the winners go and then there's three second places.
Aye, all right.
Come through.
Second places, maybe they did.
There's only three of the second places. I like the format of that cup for the low. It's better. Cause it's better than pre-season games. It's quite competitive. And then you get through to the last 16. Where it starts. I mean, we've got quite a tough draw, Celtic. I mean, the way Ross County is not an ideal draw.
Yeah. Queens are still full time, although they've gone down into the whatever they call it, below the championship. But I think getting the hands at Ibrox will help finance that.
And that'll be about a quarter of a million quid.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a real material number. But I imagine somebody like Queen of the South will be turning over about £500,000. Mm-hmm. Not much more than that as a business. So to get, I imagine, away to Rangers is probably, and it's on the telly as well, because I think Celtic and Rangers are both on the telly, so that'll be like 250, 300 grand, I would imagine.
So we are beating Aberdeen 3-0 on Sunday. We are going to win at least two of the three domestic trophies this season, and we are going to get to a European final in 2027. So there you go. That's the outcome of this podcast. And Thistle are going to be neck and neck to be Glasgow's third team.
Glasgow's second team. Let's call it.
Right, with that, Duncan, Saint left earlier, and Lackeymore, I'll say thanks very much.
Have a good season, guys. Hail.
Cheers.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
So that was the pre-season podcast with myself, Duncan, St Anthony, Lackeymore. There will, I promise, I really do promise, there will be more podcasts along soon this season. We will produce more podcasts than we did last season. We will, we're even having a lunch to discuss. Myself and Eddie are going to have a lunch where at that lunch at some point the conversation will get round to what we're going to do
about getting more podcasts out. Anyway, enough of me. The paparazzi will be out trying to get us at that lunch. This is me, Harry Bailey, saying goodnight, God bless, enjoy the season. It's going to be magic.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.